Well, good afternoon, everyone. Last week was our singing, but the week before, on a Sunday evening, we talked about our thoughts, God knowing our thoughts, and God knowing the intent of our thoughts. And so I thought this would be a good lesson to go along with that, because thoughts turn into words. And then actually, I think, Lord willing, next Lord's Day evening, we'll talk about what we look at. And understanding how important it is and what our eyes bring in and how that also determines things that we do. But tonight I want to talk about the tongue. And have you ever thought to yourself, I'm sure you have, I have, I wish I hadn't said that. Or without thinking, we talk when we should have instead been listening. I know that's a real challenge. James is very brutal about the tongue. We don't stop to think sometimes about what we're about to say, and that's something that, as we're going to see, we're going to have to do. We have to learn to do that with something that's very difficult, as James is going to point out, to accomplish in the first place. Not every thought needs to be verbalized. Sometimes we just talk and just whatever comes to our mind and our thoughts just spill right off onto the tongue, and instead of building up, it ends up tearing down. There was a tombstone inscription, and I don't know if this is true, but it makes a point. Beneath this stone, a lump of clay, lies Arabella Young, who on the 24th of May began to hold her tongue. The point there is, we can't wait to our death for our tongue to finally be under control and laid to rest. This is something that we're going to have to work at. And so James, just in James chapter 3 is where our text is. He's just brutal. I don't know how else to put it. It's not in a positive. There's like only one thing in the whole context of chapter 3 where he says, with a tongue you can bless God, but he only says that because we turn around and curse man who's made in his image. So he doesn't really have anything good to say about the tongue. And I can appreciate that and understand that, because it is something that needs to be and must be tamed or controlled. So I'm thankful that James, just like as difficult it is when you are in a husband and wife relationship to have to read through Ephesians chapter 5, where he says to the husbands, here's what you have to do, and to the wives, and various passages, they're there to help us, to improve us, it can be challenging, but James penned this to instruct us on how to be able to, and the need to be able to think about the tongue. And do it before the day of our death. And so that's what we want to talk about. So James chapter 3 and verse 1 says, my brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the tongue. So there's the danger of the uncontrolled tongue, and that is, and I actually was blessed on Thursday at the study in Athens. We're going through the book of James, and part of that study is spend about 20 minutes. The preacher will spend about 20 minutes going over a chapter. So we've gone over chapter 1, chapter 2, and John Gibson went over chapter 3. And so it's kind of a synopsis of the chapter. So knowing I was preaching this, I was glad to be able to sit at his feet and hear. And of course, with preachers there, he focused a lot on this first part. Let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. The more teaching one does, what is he saying? Well, the more teaching that you do, the more words you're going to use. And so that is then going to increase the likelihood of a teacher stumbling in words. And so he says that there needs to be consideration with regards to that. So if a person cannot actually manage to not stumble in words, then that person is actually would be a perfect individual, as he says. And if you can actually not do that, he says, you're able to bridle the whole body, put the whole body in check. So think about what he's saying. If you can actually control the tongue, as he's talking about, and not stumble in word, and he's specifically here thinking of teachers in mind, then you can, you don't have trouble with what you hear, what you see, what you think, what you, you know. So the tongue is elevated in a sense in the mind of James, especially with regards to the teacher, to be able to restrain and to hold back and to keep it in check. And if that is done, that person would be perfect. Well, that's where we all understand that, of course, none of us are perfect, because we all do stumble in word. We all do, and that includes the teacher, as he points out here. So knowing this, then, what would be the heart or the attitude then of the teacher? Well, a teacher would want to do the necessary preparation to do the teaching. And in this section, it seems like it's limited, though when you go into 3 and 4, it opens itself up to really all of us. But he's honing in on teachers here in verse 1 and 2. So what would that do? If he says, my brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment, for we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. That's going to limit teaching, because the same commit thou to faithful men. And so there is a restriction there, but that's kind of difficult when you need teachers. But it's really honing in on the seriousness of doing that and doing that to the best of our ability. So we need to look at it from the standpoint of teachers having a grave responsibility in what they say and what they teach. Paul gave Timothy this advice. So hold your place. Go over to 2 Timothy. And Timothy was a young man that was traveling with Paul. He was left in places. He was an evangelist. He was somebody that was left in places to teach. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, I'm looking at verse 24. He says, and a servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but be gentle to all, able to teach, patient, in humility, correcting those who are in opposition, if God perhaps will grant them repentance, so that they may know the truth, that they may come to their senses and escape the snare of the devil, having been taken captive by him to do his will. So notice that in all of that, what's he telling Timothy? Well, he's saying there's got to be self-control. That's essential, because there should not be quarreling. So Thayer's defines quarreling as those who engage in the war of words. And so he's saying, don't do that. In fact, before that, in verse 23, he says, avoid foolish and ignorant disputes, knowing that they gender strife. And that's very important to know when that is taking place, because it is not something that is beneficial. So Paul told Timothy, don't quarrel, but he says you got to be gentle to all. And when there is strife, you have to demonstrate gentleness. He says, able to teach to Timothy. It is at that moment that one's knowledge of a subject needs to be imparted. Now, I remember I told you this morning that it took a long time for me to start preaching and teaching and giving lessons and so forth. But I remember plainly that, you know, when you bring a lesson, I remember Dad setting me at ease by telling me, if you've done your study, you may have somebody that is much more knowledgeable than you sitting in the audience. But they aren't going to necessarily be up on what, when's the last time they thought about the tongue or taught on the tongue or something of that nature? So if you know your material, then you're going to present something that'll be beneficial to all, And that really helped me understand that, and this is off of the comment that I'm making, as he says, able to teach. And my comment was, at that moment, that's when one's knowledge of the subject is to be imparted. Well, the key there is the knowledge of the subject. And so that's what the preparation and apt to teach, being able to teach. So whatever subject it is, and that's my point, is like if you're teaching on a subject, you know, for example, I brought up John Gibson. Well, John Gibson, it just so happened, you know, that I'd been looking at the tongue. So I couldn't have got up and done as well as he had, but even because he had studied it that day, was more inclined and more apt to be able to teach because of, again, the necessary work that was done and labor in the study. And it's not in a haughtiness, you know, as he says, gentle, not in a haughtiness, but in humility. So never is this idea, now I'm going off of James, the teacher having the stricter judgment because of words, it's in humility. It's not in a haughtiness. So in the example I gave, it's not this idea, well, I know what I'm talking about and I'm going to tell you right now. That's not the attitude that Paul is telling Timothy to have. In humility. In humility even, he says, correcting those who are in opposition. And so that's, again, that's a fine balance, isn't it? So you come back to James chapter 3 and verse 1, and you look at those two verses, and you think about what James is saying when he says that there is this stricter judgment to take place, and that if anybody is able to not stumble in words, that person is perfect. I think he just pretty much hacked everybody off, including the teacher, at the knees to say, this is serious. This is serious, what he is going to say. And so from there, beginning in verse 3, he says, indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn the whole body. You put this little bitty thing in this big old horse's mouth, and you tug it, and it's going to direct the horse. And we understand that. He says, look also at ships. Although they are so large, they are driven by fierce winds. They are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Have you seen these massive ships? And while if we brought in one of these rudders that's under the water, they'd be huge. We'd stand there and look at them and go, this is massive. But in scale to the size of the ship, it's a small thing. But you turn that thing and the water hits it and it pushes against that surface and it makes the ship turn. He says something that we can understand. Although the ship is large, they are driven by fierce winds. And think about that. The winds are pushing, but what's that rudder doing? He says it's turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot lists us. So that he turns that wheel and that rudder. It's the same thing. You know, airplanes, have you ever come in for a landing and you're going like this and you're going like that and the wind's blowing? You know what the pilot's doing? He's got pedals, and he's changing this rudder, and the rudder's catching the wind. And when it catches it, it pushes the plane, and it pushes the way that the pilot is doing it. So he's using that strong winds coming across, wanting to push the plane. He uses this little bitty rudder, and he's able to take that and stick it right down the runway. And one time, Lisa and I were landing in Charlotte, so it was an American airline. And I'm telling you, I thought we were flying, here's the runway, I thought we were flying like this. We were just like all over the place. And this guy sitting says, I've flown in here a lot, and this just doesn't seem right. Well, we didn't get to go on the same play. We had to wait a few minutes. And finally, when we got on to go from there to Florida years ago, the pilots who got on said, sorry about the delay, folks. We had rudder trouble. And I thought, do you think? There was some kind of problem that wasn't getting that plane steered down the runway correct. So it's almost like we're going like this, and he's going, boy, I hope I can get the nose around. But it's just a small thing compared to the compared to the aircraft. Same point he's making here. Verse 5, so even the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. That was our scripture reading. So the danger of an uncontrolled tongue is it boasts great things. The tongue in proportion to the whole body is a small member. Do you have any idea how big your tongue is? Let me tell you, on average, it's about 3 inches long, and it's about just over 2.5 inches wide. It's not a very big member in comparison to the body. It's a boneless mass. It's made up of 8 muscles that are intertwined. You remember I talked about the trunk of the elephant? And what, I forget, was it 1,000 muscles all intertwined and able to pick up a penny down there with you know? Well, the tongue is that, it's muscles that are intertwined. But this small member of the body is capable of boasting great things. Great things. And it's one of the struggles that confronts all of us. Just think about some of the things. We talk big, don't we? Oh, I can handle it. Or I would have told them off. Or they better not say that to me. Oh yeah, we can. But he says, you know, the little member, it boasts great things. Boast. I can do that. I'm going to get you. But we have to acknowledge that the results of our boasting of great things, Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 19, in the first part of that verse, Proverbs 10 and verse 19, in the multitudes of words, sin is not lacking. Sin is not lacking. And then that verse 5 says it burns the great forest down. A little tongue burns the big forest down. Sometimes our careless use of the tongue leads to the destructions of a marriage, a home, a congregation, truly any and all kinds of relationships, doesn't it? A few ungodly words creates a lot of damage. There is one who speaks like the piercing of a sword, Proverbs 12 and verse 18, the first part. Proverbs 15:4 says, but perverseness is in it, the tongue, breaks the spirit, Proverbs 15 and in verse 4. He says, James says, it's not only that, but he says, the tongue's a fire, a world of iniquity. Now, nothing he said this far is anything positive about the tongue. It's a fire and world of iniquity. Iniquity is wrongfulness or unrighteousness. James is emphasizing over and over again the devastation of the tongue. Because when it's left unbridled, it's unrighteousness. It doesn't lead to anything good, only to what is wrong. And so he says in verse 6, not only that, but he says it defiles the whole body. That little member ends up corrupting the whole body. Your character, think about how your character is diminished by the things that we say. Maybe it's profanity. Maybe it's evil speaking. He says that defiles the whole body, your character. How many people have reputations based on the things that come out of their mouth? Because it stains, that's the part he's saying, it stains, it soils, it defiles the whole body. What does? The tongue does that. And then I've made this point often, and Lisa's becoming Southern, by the way. I'm hearing her say more and more, bless his heart, bless her heart. Crossing your fingers while talking doesn't change the damage a person has done to their whole body in the eyes of God. And that goes back to, God knows what you said. In fact, Jesus said, you will be judged by every idle word. Every last one of them. Does that not cause us to pause? You remember, we talked about not just what you think about. God is able to know your intent behind that thought. So we talked about what do you have to do to learn that lesson and then do what is right. Well, think about what he's saying about the tongue. And again, at this point, I couldn't help but think, boy, James is trying to tell me something, isn't he? I mean, he's just, is he trying to say something? Look at all the things that he said. And he doesn't stop there. He says, it sets on fire the course of nature in verse 6. The word course means a wheel. And what I picture is the natural course of life. It sets on fire the natural course of life. A tongue leads a destructive force all along the way. It can, can't it? And he says we all struggle with this, so this is a lesson that's not just for you, it's for me. He says it's set on fire by hell. Think about that. This is a little thing that sets a fire and will burn down a great forest. And he says, what set it on fire? What's the source to get the tongue? He says, it is set on fire by hell. That's not good. There's nothing good about hell. There's nothing cute about hell. And then he says this in verse 8, but no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. And this is where I'm just going to close and sit down because we can't do anything about it. Right? By verse 8, we're thinking, at least I'm thinking, well, then what's the use because we can't tame it. But at this point, we should be thinking, I better start figuring out how to do it because it's such a serious matter. Because if you can tame the tongue, he says, you're a perfect man back in verse 2. So none of us are perfect, so we can't tame the tongue. And so it's kind of rather defeating if we stop and think, what's the use? But of course, this type of language in the Bible is meant to do what? It's meant to grab your attention. It's meant to stop you in your shoes. It's meant to wake us up. It's designed to hold it, you know, hold your tongue long enough for you to realize the great damage we can do with what comes out of our mouths. That word in this verse is intended to say, but boy, I better try. And it needs to come to us quickly sometimes, doesn't it? It's an unruly evil full of poison in verse 8. You know, remember the old saying, loose lips sinks ships? You know what that was? Yeah, that was a war term, wasn't it? That was like, if you get to talking and you say something you shouldn't, and that's, we see even that today. We see that sometimes in our politicians where they start saying, wait a minute, their girlfriend is an agent of another country. And so you start thinking, what have they told them? Because, you know, so it comes in, so what, because what's loose lips going to do? Well, back in that time, if you said something, then the enemy knows where you're at, and then your ship gets sunk. So unrestrained tongue is what James says. Is that good, an unrestrained tongue? No, it's an evil. And then there's a common connection between all of these different words James is using in their meaning. And let me kind of lay them out. And it's the idea of providing no restraint to the tongue. Iniquity. He used the word iniquity. He used the word unruly. He has used the word tame, which untamed would be it, you know, restrain it in the, you restrain it or it's unrestrained. And so again, this connection is it's either restrained or it's not restrained. And so what is James trying to say by talking about how bad it is? He's saying you better restrain it. And so when I first married Lisa, she said, my dad has a lesson about the tongue, and he came up with a lot of putting skid guards on it and different things to keep it in control. My dad used to say, well, God gave you teeth to bite it and lips to close it and a lot of different things, you know, to zip it up. And that's what we do, right? Zip it up. Well, he also goes on, and you think about it, he says it's a deadly poison, verse 8. Well, we know what a venomous snake does with poison, right? Well, he says that's kind of like your tongue. It'll strike an unruled tongue, and it can be deadly. And then he says in verse 9 to 12, but with it, the tongue, we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the mouth proceed blessings and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. So this is what I came up with. This is it is the tongue can be forked. And by that I mean with it we can bless God, and with the same tongue we can curse men. That's a forked tongue. From the very same mouth we can bless, but with the same mouth we can curse. And then there's a clear picture of hypocrisy in these verses. We claim with our tongue to praise God the Father, and yet out of the other side of the mouth we comes our hatred and abhorrence of fellow man in whom God made them in the same image. And it's interesting that he's not even in this context, I don't think he's talking about a Christian and talking to Christ. I think it's everybody. It's the lady at the grocery store, it's the man at the place where you get your tires, and wherever. The way you treat people, the way we were talking about, the royal law that we talked about this morning. We claim to be praising God, but then we can't stand anybody. Knuckleheads and idiots. And he says, you can't do that. You can't have this forked tongue. And to make that point, he says things that are true. He says, you know, water's either drinkable or not drinkable. And you don't drink salt water. And I don't turn on the spigot and somehow you get salt and fresh. You can't have that. It doesn't work that way at all. And fig trees, do they bear olives? No, they don't. Does a grapevine bear figs? No. Springs don't bear salt and fresh water. So you can't be a hypocrite when it comes to our tongue and what we speak. That's how I came up with this, again, this idea of a forked tongue. So James points out that man has tamed every kind of animal. Every kind of animal man has tamed. Verse 7. Every kind of beast and bird and reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no man can tame the tongue. It's an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Jesus said, for by your words you will be justified. Mark chapter 12 and verse 37. And by your words you will be condemned. Jesus is saying this is serious, just like James is. James isn't pulling any punches when it comes to his text by inspiration. And so at this point, I'm feeling whipped. I mean, you just feel like, wow, you've just been punched and beat up about the tongue. It's full of deadly poison. You can't tame it. But this text reveals just how serious it is. And what we need to do is be thinking about what's coming out of our mouth. And so the text simply does not let us ignore our words. And that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. Well, then the rest of the text in taming the tongue while you cannot bring it into perfect control, since you're not a perfect person, you can still train it. Which this isn't unique. This is true of any aspect of my walk as a Christian that I haven't mastered and done what's right. I've stumbled, I repent, I don't make the same mistake. If I do, I try to figure out how to not do the same thing. But while you bring it into subjection, you need to do so. And what that does is it makes sure the tongue is not just a wild thing. It's something that we learn to control. And so, with that in mind, you put guards on it. There's an obvious contrast in the text between tamed and untamed. It's either tamed or untamed. It's either controlled or uncontrolled. It's either restrained or it's not restrained. And so we have to learn to put these guards on our mouth. So Proverbs 21:23 says, "Whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from troubles." Proverbs 21:23. The word guard in that text is to keep it or to have it under control, to keep it in check. And those are words that we can understand. That means that in heated situations, emotional situations, charged situations, you and I will have to what? Think before we speak. And God made it where the tongue is ruled by something that controls it. And what is that? That's the head. That's the head. It is what controls all parts of the body. If my hand shouldn't move, it's my head that's saying it shouldn't move, and so it doesn't move. If my hand said raise it to make an illustration, my hand went up. If I'm doing this and I have no control, y'all would be going, what's the matter with him? You might be thinking that already without my hand going up. So God has given each of us the ability to do what? Keep our mouths shut. Our head can and must rule over all the parts of our body. All the parts of our body. And so it's not easy, but it's something we must do, because our failure to control it is what James has just spent all this time talking about. Proverbs 21, verse 23. Proverbs 21, 23, the first part of that verse says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue." So let's look at, as we close, James 3. Let's look at verse 13 to 18, because I think this is how we learn to understand the teaching and principles and wisdom that is needed to be able to see the differences and steer our course of the tongue in the right direction. James chapter 3, verse 13 says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your heart, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable and gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy, good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." Meekness and wisdom is what guards our tongue. Wisdom from above, verse 17, guards our tongue. Learning to use the wisdom God has given us. We've been studying a lot in Corinthians where he's telling the Corinthians, you've got problems, but here's the solution. And if they didn't correct it, or an individual didn't correct it, guess what? That individual will be judged by God. And so scriptures are given to help us. And so he says, there, he gives us this wisdom that's from above. He says it's pure. Well, if you want to be right with God, in our subject, well, you don't have a defiled tongue, because that's what's going to defile the whole body. Peaceable, desire peace. What's the opposite of that? The bitterness and the envy. That doesn't create the peace. Gentle. There is absolutely no glory in acting all tough and boasting of great things, because true greatness, you know what made Moses great? Was meekness, which is so closely tied to gentleness. Moses could be insulted and put down, and he'd be the first one falling down before God, begging him to not destroy the people that had just done that to him. Does that sound like Jesus from the cross? Forgive them, for they know not what they do. So we have examples of how to do these things correctly. Proverbs 15:4, a gentle tongue is a tree of life. A gentle tongue is a tree of life, Proverbs 15:4. He says, willing to yield. It's not a matter of right or wrong, because we know we stand for truth. But there's times we just need to yield. That's wisdom from above. Full of mercy. There are times you may be, and I may be, we may be exactly right. And our words can be true. But what is needed is what? Mercy. Extended. Mercy of a controlled tongue. To not go after, but to be in control. Instead of cursing, you bless the hearer with good fruits. Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath. Proverbs 12:8, the tongue of the wise promotes health. Proverbs 10:19, he who restrains his lips is wise. So there's those passages that put in the positive, but all of those, there's thought, there is control, there's gentleness, there is thought of, is this building up or tearing down? And the other thing he says back in our text in verse 17, without partiality, without hypocrisy. You can't bless and curse from the same mouth. You have to be genuine and be fair and have favor and not have favoritism, but be fair. And so that is a challenge, I think, for all of us. Now, all of that, if you come back to 1 and 2, as a teacher and those that are teachers, then this again, you go through that, and that is exactly what has to be administered because of the things that James has said. So the behavior of the tongue is to be governed by the wisdom that comes from God. And so we've got a lot of scriptures, of course, that teach that. Well, I hope that's been beneficial to you. It certainly has been to me. Lord willing, I hope to kind of continue that thought because of the realities of the way that things enter and exit the body, whether it's through words or the things that come into the body through sight, the Bible addresses those types of things. And so hopefully it'll be helpful to us each as we look into the scriptures. Well, you might be here this afternoon and you're not a Christian. We want to extend that invitation. Steve has selected our invitation song. And if there's a need for someone to obey the gospel, we stand ready to help you do that. There's a need to make correction or confession of sins or anything that needs to be addressed to the congregation, or maybe even encouragement is needed at this time. We ask you to come as we stand and sing.